Hello, everyone. Welcome back to News at Noon. It is currently Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. This episode will be shown tomorrow. And with us here today, we have a very special guest. We're joined by Dr. Jason Roy, Associate Professor in the Department of Political Science at Laurier. And Dr. Roy, do you want to tell us a bit about your background in poli-sci and the sort of areas of expertise that you focus on?
Sure, yes. Thank you, first off, for having me on the show. I appreciate the invitation.
And thank you for joining us.
Being part of this. My research focuses largely on political behavior, voting behavior, looking at individual level preferences and how these beliefs or choices are made in terms of elections, in terms of policy preferences, and more generally, how these preferences might be change over time, or how they may be affected by different events or different factors through campaigns and so on and so forth.
Okay, so it's wonderful. It's great to have you on here. And of course, as always, we have our hosts, Rajni and Jeffrey.
Hi, everyone.
And
hey.
So let's get started. As I'm sure is on everyone's mind, the recent events in the United States with the Capitol riots have been dominating the news recently, and for good reason. Just as a bit of background, on January 6th, the U.S. Was it the representatives or the Congress? My mind is drawing a blank right now. They were going to be voting to certify Joe Biden as the winner of the U.S. presidential election in 2020, and a group of pro-Trump rioters stormed the Capitol building, and as a result, five people died, and it's been a bit of a hellstorm in the past few days, and some people are even saying that Trump might be impeached for a insurrection. And it's been pretty crazy these past 2 days, as I'm sure we can all agree. And, you know, just as a bit of background, this is something that has never really happened before on this scale. You know, not once has a president ever been accused of insurrection. And
not even been accused of.
No, not even close. And, you know, as I only recently learned, the 25th Amendment in its current form was only really brought into effect in the 60s. And, you know,
wow.
If he were to be removed from office, it would be an extraordinary event. But, you know, bringing it all back into context, I wanted to start by asking you, Dr. Roy, as an expert on elections and political behavior, what set this election apart from other U.S. presidential elections in recent years, in your opinion?
Yeah, this is certainly a loaded question. There's so many aspects to consider with this. You know, I think one of the incredible things, first off, is that many people and still are quite shocked by Trump winning the presidency, winning the election, and what that meant in terms of even at the party level in the run up as they were running through the primaries and what have you before Trump won the nomination to run for the party. For many in the area and academics who study political behavior, study party politics, elections, it was surprising. There weren't many that actually predicted that outcome. During his presidency, I think it goes fairly safe to say that this has been an unprecedented presidency. We haven't seen the likes of this, at least not that I'm aware of in any historical context in North America.
Yeah, no doubt.
The idea that he has such a strong following, I think, is an important one because it suggests that he's perhaps given voice to a I don't think it's a majority. I think it's certainly a vocal minority, but he certainly has given voice to some ideas that weren't necessarily front and center and certainly weren't mainstream. And I think this has led to a greater division, particularly in the U.S. Context. Between ideologies. I mean, it's certainly in relation to Canada has been much more divided in terms of politics and political ideology. At least I would argue it has been. This has certainly emphasized these differences and has maybe brought some of the ideas and preferences that weren't necessarily as vocal by providing them with a platform, with a individual, in fact, a leader of the country who has given voice and attention to some of these alternative positions, alternative thoughts and belief systems, or beliefs rather, that has led to what we saw happen this past week, which I think is is certainly as everyone else was, I was absolutely shocked by the events that unfolded.
Yeah, and I mean, what you said about being able to give, a voice to these people who might not have felt that they're able to, speak out about the things that they believe in. That's definitely a very important point, because there's a very large percentage of people in the United States who felt obviously that, the office of the president and the U.S. government isn't really able to represent them in a way that they felt was adequate. And a lot of them felt that, there was a disconnect between the office of the president and, the average American.
Yeah.
So when someone like Trump, who, sort of posited his presidency around being an outsider to the political sphere, burst into the scene, even though in reality he's far, far different from the average American just by virtue of his immense wealth, mm-hmm. as compared to someone like Joe Biden, when someone like that posits himself as, your average American fighting for the common man, it's surprising, but not that surprising to see that he ended up winning the election and growing this fervent base of supporters.
Yeah, I mean, important to put it. Oh, sorry, go ahead,
Ren. Sorry, I was just gonna. I'll wait till you finish answering, but I was just gonna add a follow up question, because I noticed you mentioned alternate perspectives being represented by Trump supporters. So go ahead, and I'll just ask my question after you finish.
Sure. I just to quickly point out as well that one of the things we have to be cautious of, and by we I mean the folks who pay any attention to this, is to recognize that the what we are seeing is not necessarily a reflection of a majority, even close to majority of Americans, and those and the position and preferences or ideas even a large group. I mean, I suppose maybe a large group, but certainly not a majority by any means. In the U.S. context, voting turnout rates are typically in that 50% range. And if you look back to what happened in the presidential election rather for Trump, is that we had a turnout of approximately 50%, where about half of those votes went to Trump. So that's about 25% within that population,
right,
again, of eligible voters. And then if you take that again and you assume that not everyone, in fact, fully supports Trump, but they support the Republican Party, they simply wouldn't vote Democrat and they wouldn't take the option not to vote for whatever reason. So even if you assume that half of that again are not necessarily those who strongly believe in what Trump is putting forward, but simply believe in the party and have a deeper ingrained Republican sort of preferences that they simply can't break, regardless of who's in the position of leadership. We're talking a percentage of maybe 10 to 15% at best. So it is a small number if you put it into those kind of breaking it down that way. And I think that's important to remember. What we do see, though, is that is a very active number of individuals, those who have very, very strong beliefs and have taken action that I think would be fair to say that most members of a democratic state would view as being simply unbelievable and certainly not warranted.
Mm-hmm. Roger, so you wanted to
yeah,
answer?
I was going to ask Dr. Roy a follow-up question. So I noticed you had mentioned that Trump supporters tend to represent a voice that's not necessarily always represented in politics. So what role do you think conspiracy theories like QAnon would have played in bringing those type of perspectives to the front, and then by extension affecting the election and leading up to the events of January 6th?
Yeah, I mean, fascinating. We live in an age now where there are so many sources of information, some what might be viewed as legitimate and others that may be questionable. But even then, who defines, I suppose, what is legitimate and what is not? I think this is why it becomes even more important that individuals, students, and young people and those who are trying to assess and take in all these varying messages that they're receiving, look at everything with a critical view and try to weigh in the evidence. What are the arguments? What are the positions? Because it certainly seems that there are those who are receiving messages and then limiting their exposure to reinforcing messages. And this reinforcement, whether it's based on quote unquote real evidence or some type of a valid sort of assessment of reality, these messages, regardless, are being reinforced over and over again. This is all that they're hearing, and this tends to try to reinforce the beliefs. And you know, I don't question that those who are involved in this uprising, what you want to call this, strongly believe that they are right. There's no doubt in my mind that they believe that what they're doing is the right thing to do. Which leads to other questions. I mean, how do we try to understand that? How do we try to take a position where we can try as best we can, even if we completely disagree with it? How can we try to at least appreciate why they might think this? How these ideas have been developed, and how do we have a conversation that allows for a sharing of ideas and positions and arguments that allow us to hopefully arrive at some sense of reality. And hopefully fact-based understandings, interpretations of what's gone on.
Yeah, like I definitely think social media would have had a big role to play in that, because I think we tend to be caught up in a lot of echo chambers when we're on social media. Like if you support a position, social media algorithms show you stuff that you have been interested in before. So if you take one position, you're likely to see content that represents that same position over and over. So you never really have to challenge yourself. So I think that's one of the downfalls that we have to overcome to be able to have that conversation.
Yeah. Sure. And one of my, my take on a university degree should offer you exactly that. It should be a space where you can share and listen to both your own beliefs and your background and your preferences and your experiences, and listen to how others perceive things and their understanding of reality is, and then try to, based on all of that information, try to assess your own positions and continuously be reassessing your own positions with a variety of different information sources. And you're absolutely right about this idea that it is, in an era when we didn't have so many choices for news outlets or social sites that would allow us to receive very tailored messages at the individual level. In this era, we can certainly isolate ourselves from any opposing ideas and beliefs, which I would suspect doesn't help our situation in terms of trying to understand at least, or at least accept that there are other views.
And particularly, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, Dr. Yeah, it's very interesting, and I was wondering if I could ask you, do you think this is sort of the beginning of political upheaval in America? Or do you think this is sort of like an eye-opening moment and the government will kind of sort of lock down and make sure nothing else happens like this?
Well, in terms of actual violence, I mean, I certainly hope there's preparations, as I understand it, in place already to try to limit any further action that might come about in the coming weeks with the transition of power. I hope it's also viewed this as one of those opportunities to learn and to maybe recognize for those who maybe weren't aware of these opposing ideas and this sense of injustice, this sense of being ignored by the system. Being irrelevant to the system, having no impact on decision making and policy decisions that are being made, it is certainly maybe idealistic for me to think this, but perhaps a chance for government to recognize that there are some problems that need to be addressed and maybe to actually take solid action to try to maybe not satisfy, but certainly to recognize some of these concerns and maybe put forward some. Hopefully, I like to think under Biden's presidency, efforts to try to at least offer a peaceful sort of recognition and hopefully some actions that might help to settle some of the discontent.
And particularly, you bring up the point of discontent, and that got me thinking about a poll I saw recently, an Ipsos poll from November 18th, so right after the election. Americans were asked to indicate how much they agree or disagree with a list of statements, which I'm very clearly remember going over in 2017. And the statement that stood out to me was, "I am concerned that the election is rigged." So among Republican respondents, 67% of them said that they either somewhat or strongly agree with that statement, as well as 17% of Democrats, and as a total, 39% of total respondents said that they are concerned that the election is rigged. So despite there being, a litany of proof that there is no genuine evidence of widespread voter fraud, do you think that this growing distrust of the electoral system is a genuine cause for concern in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be fascinating to go back, and I'm not sure that they have this information, but it would be fascinating to go back to 2016 and see if similar questions were asked, because at that time it was reversed. It was a large Democratic push questioning the validity of some of the elections and questioning whether or not there is external influence on the vote outcome. Maybe not as, I suppose in some cases it was, claims that the election was rigged, and what are the implications? I mean, certainly there is. There are the quote unquote losing party, the losing side is not going to be happy about it. And they might feel that they were perhaps treated unfairly. I hate to bring in sports analogies, but let me just do this. Anybody's ever played on a sporting team, baseball, for example, might always think the umpires were a little bit friendlier towards the other team. And I'm sure that that runs both ways. It may not be so different in this case. It is, I suppose, incumbent upon the government and the officials to make it clear moving forward as well that these elections are being held in a way that are not the opportunity to in fact alter votes or influence the outcome in any way beyond having individuals participate. All efforts have been made to ensure this and that these protections are in place. I still think there are going to be those who will question some of the actions, some of the outcomes. But I mean, this is a, it's even a greater philosophical or theoretical question. What actually establishes why is it that individuals accept the outcome of these elections? Why is it that they respect that this is now the governing party or this is now the leader of the country? And that is what I think this situation at a much deeper level has provided us with an opportunity to try to study and understand what is it that why is it that we would simply recognize power in this case in the U.S. Is it simply holding a position in the White House? Is it some other type of factors that must be present in order for individuals to accept this? And that certainly one of these aspects would certainly be the sense that the elections were free and fair elections. If, as we go back to the point that was raised earlier, if individuals are only listening to certain sides of an argument from selected sources, then the idea that this has been rigged, this has been stolen, is likely being reinforced in numerous ways, including evidence that may, by all accounts, be quite questionable. But nonetheless, for the individuals
who are getting this, including by the president himself.
Well, absolutely. Things that are objectively not true. I guess it does create this environment that makes it very difficult to present any counter arguments if the individuals aren't simply willing to even listen.
Just to follow off of your point of what makes people accept the results as valid, I definitely think that whoever holds the power sets the precedent they set the precedent for how the rest of the public will take the results. So I think if the person in power accepts it and says, okay, this is a legitimate election, then of course people will think and agree, like people will be more inclined to accept it if authority figures accept it.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean. And I definitely think Trump has fueled that fire of people not accepting it and possibly maybe increase the number of people who don't accept it because he himself doesn't accept it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this began even before the election. I mean, it was, there is statements, and I'm not going to directly quote anything because I can't do it justice, but there was certainly some evidence or some comments made that would suggest that Trump might have believed that the only way he could lose the election is if it were rigged. That was before individuals even started voting. So it leads to some question as to whether any outcome besides his victory or his win would have had an alternative sort of position on his part. The point that he has in large part kept this going, I completely agree, and I think this is why there are currently actions dealing with the first option being the 25th Amendment, and then followed by impeachment a second time that are being pursued because of the idea of accountability. I mean, this is the individual who is up until the next week or so, the leader of the United States of America, which should have, we'd like to think, incredible responsibility and thoughtfulness and what have you. And I don't think we're seeing that. I don't know that we've seen that in, in the last few years. And I think that is certainly, in my view at least, a bit of a scary situation. However, that said, to flip it, somebody once suggested that the institutions are working, even though we have seen such controversy based on the outcome of the election, and even in the past few years, the system itself, the mechanisms, the institutions in place, for all of their faults, do seem to have succeeded, at least in leading to what I hope to be this transition to power, this transition in office. And that's what I guess we have to fall back on is how strong are these institutions, the fundamentals, the foundations, and hopefully that will be enough to get through this turbulent time. Let's not forget this is also happening in during a global pandemic. To everything else that's going on. Add this to issues of poverty and health access, all of these other factors that are there anyhow, but have certainly increased considerably under the current situation. And it's just a combination of factors that has led to what we're currently seeing, at least as I see it.
Doctor, I think that's a really interesting point. I definitely agree. I think because Trump is so unconventional as a politician, he really appeals to people don't really understand institutions and sort of social structures and just listen to words. And so I was going to ask you, do you think sort of the Capitol riot events will have any effect on sort of the demographics of Trump supporters? Do you think he's going to lose maybe a certain race or gender population of his supporters because of this?
Yeah, interesting question. I mean, I think those who strongly support Trump aren't going to change. In fact, they may be encouraged by what happened in some ways. They may not, hopefully, may not see themselves engaging in the same type of action, but they certainly won't condemn what took place. I think you actually saw that during the vote, where there may have been a number of senators who were at least at one point considering voting against accepting results of certain states. That shifted. They changed it, and I think it was an eye opener for many of them, who might have been more moderate, supporting Trump partly because they're supporting the Republican Party, who then recognized the danger. And saw what kind of an effect this was having, and I think that might have shifted some of these attitudes and positions as well. It will be an interesting 4 years for the Republican Party to see what happens. Of course, Trump and many Trump supporters are already thinking moving forward of the next election, and whether Trump would be the Republican candidate. This is in part some of the efforts for this current or second impeachment, is whether or not that would prevent him from running again, and what that might entail if he did run again, and we continue with 4 more years of him having a voice to encourage supporters. So I guess that, just to try to directly answer your question, will it lead to increased support? Possibly, although I think those who support him were likely supporters to begin with. I think if anything, I'd like to think, maybe I'm again naive on this, but I'd like to think if anything, he might have lost a bit of support with this. Certainly from those who were more moderate, yeah. Might have supported his general beliefs and the idea of this more populist state, but maybe not so much the actions and the ways in which he tried to achieve those.
I mean, I was particularly surprised to see Senator Lindsey Graham, change his position, because he's been one of the most virulent supporters of Donald Trump. And after the riots, he said, and I quote, "Count me out. Enough is enough." And, that was crazy to me hearing him say that, because this is, him along with someone like Ted Cruz is someone who I never really expected, and again, Ted Cruz has stayed strong with Donald Trump throughout all of this, but I never expected to see someone like Lindsey Graham, I don't want to say breaching party lines, but
speak out, aggressively and openly disavow himself from Trump.
Yeah,
exactly. And one of the reasons I say breaching party lines is because, for a long time, and especially recently, Trump was the Republican Party. But, you know, especially since the Capitol riots, there have been calls for a potential for a splinter party. Some names that I've seen thrown around being the Patriot Party. So do you think that given the number of senators and Republicans who have attempted to distance themselves from Trump, do you think that there will potentially be a splinter party that could form, which is more like Trump loyalists separate from the more moderate Republicans?
Yeah, I mean, these subgroups likely already exist under the current Republican banner, as they do in the Democratic Party as well. There's subgroups within each party, I'm sure, of those who like to see more extreme policy and positions on either side of the spectrum. You know, whether or not we see a splinter party, possible. I mean, there have been similar type efforts in the U.S. and other countries for that matter. But typically, given the strength of the two-party system, the voting system, the institutions, what have in the U.S., they would likely have very little impact in terms of, well, very little impact in terms of their likelihood of actually succeeding and taking any sort of, or controlling any sort of power. What they might end up doing is actually taking votes away from the Republican Party. That would potentially work out to an advantage for the Democratic Party. I mean, not arguably unlike what we saw here in Canada when we had the Progressive Conservative Party that a group split off, the Reform Party, which then went on to become the Alliance Party and is now the Conservative Party of Canada. I mean, they went through this split and then they went back through a merger. Part of it was this recognition that they were competing with one another and they're just simply taking votes away from each other, and they'd never defeat the Liberal Party as long as that continued. And so while you might get a subgroup and you might get pushed to have this new party or the splinter party, I don't think it would certainly endure. And I think the recognition as to what the impact would be would bring it to a quick end.
Well, I mean, it's in a way, it's sort of reassuring to know that such a party would not be able to, you know, gain much traction. But, you know, it's also it also brings to mind questions of whether, you know, how different the U.S. would look under a different political system, like if they had,
multiple parties.
Multiple party system. Because
they do have multiple, but.
True, multiple viable parties, or if they had, I'm forgetting the name, but like one person, one vote, like if they didn't have something like the Electoral College, because I've seen calls for the Electoral College to be abolished from mainly the left, but
And if I can just interrupt for 1 second, just on the point that you say about traction, I should just also note as well, though, that in some cases parties form and compete in elections, not to win, not necessarily to win, but to bring attention to certain issues, because that detracts from the public discourse, the debate that takes place, the discussions that take place. You can think of the Marijuana Party, for example, in Canada, had a single issue, or at least at the time did. This is certainly possible, because what it does is it shifts the discussion. It brings attention to issues that may not otherwise receive the attention, and that can be viewed by some as being the successful outcome. It's not even no misconception that they might actually win power, but that they're going to create a discourse, or at least change the saliency of different issues during the election, that forces more time to be devoted to issues that may not otherwise have been considered.
And I think a good example of that would be something like the Green Party, which, I mean, was started around the early 1980s as just a very, very small party of people running as independents in favor of a green or a greener version of politics that they would like to see in place. And it's, they're a bit more of a political force than, let's say, like the libertarians are in the United States, but this is a good example of a party that was relatively single issue at first and has more of a voice in politics, at least in Canada.
I mean, noting too that the Green Party is more of an international, global party as well. It has different roots in different countries. So, but maybe in the Canadian context.
So, just wrapping up here, I think we've got time for one or two more questions. Rajan and Jeffrey, you want to tackle any of these?
Yeah, so following up off of what you said about fringe parties exist to add to the discourse, do you think it could be potentially dangerous if people who splintered off from the Republican Party to be like a Trump supporter party, do you think it could be dangerous for them to be allowed that platform to share their discourse, given that from what we've seen over the past 4 years, a lot of their discourse is really just peddling conspiracy theories?
Yeah. Do I personally think that? Absolutely. But that's a personal opinion. I want to be careful not to suggest this is based on any type of research or objective sort of criteria. It's my personal belief. I guess the concern, or one of the issues that arises in this, and this may be based more on academic or research background, is the idea that when you have these issues that achieve this sort of public recognition, becomes part of the public discourse, what you often end up seeing is that they get equal, the various sides of the debate end up getting equal time, an effort for media sources and others to try to at least offer a fair sort of allotment of space or time or to get their messages out there. The problem is that it's often not the case that these have equal support, that it's not that half the population supports this position and half supports that position. In many cases, when you're dealing with these more extreme issues or more extreme positions, it's typically a very small group, 5-10%, if that, of the population, but yet they're in some cases given equal weight in terms of the time that they're allotted to speak on the issue. So it creates this appearance that they are equally as relevant and salient within the population. And that's perhaps where opinion lies, which I think can be, can potentially lead to some problems, some issues, in the sense that they're given this sense of validity based on the attention and the time that they're allotted. That said, it's certainly, I'm not by any means suggesting that we shouldn't have discussions and public discussions in some of these debates and some of these, different perspectives and points of view, but I do think they have to be based on some type of objective evidence. My background certainly believes that there is an objective reality and that we can observe it and learn from it and grow from it. And I think that's an important part that we just need to keep in mind as we move forward and try to recognize that everybody might have different perspectives, different opinions, but try to learn from each other and continuously assess where we think reality fits.
Definitely.
It's a very good point.
Yeah, I was just to finally wrap up with sort of a little question / comment. I think it's really fascinating, Trump's social media ban. And I think it's on Twitter, Facebook, like a bunch of different sites. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see if that sort of calms the situation or if that just makes it a lot worse.
That's a great point. I have a good friend of mine whose daughter is she would have just been first year of high school, who made a comment that I thought was absolutely brilliant, that said, if you get kicked off of Twitter, you shouldn't be allowed to run the largest country in the free world. and I thought that it's a good point. If you can't be responsible enough to use social media platforms responsibly, then maybe you need to reconsider things. The concern, I suppose, is that they move the platform to a more private, less public, that becomes draws in a different type of more active or more extremist sort of individuals, and I suppose for better or for worse, what that could lead to, and I think that's what we're currently seeing, or at least there's threats of that's what's happening, is that there's going to be efforts to move to some other forms of social media that would be more limited to an extremist group. What does that mean? Well, it I suppose it's going to make perhaps those who are already traveling down that route or have those positions to begin with is probably going to just reinforce them even more. So I don't know what the solution is. Does Trump's just to use this exact example, does his statement on Twitter, does it actually lead others to follow him and to develop these beliefs or share his beliefs, or does it simply bring everybody else to reassess their positions and maybe even reinforce their own position, which may be somewhat different from what's being said? I think those who dislike Trump will be furious or infuriated by the messages, and those who love him will eat it up. They'll think it's fantastic. So, that's
It's a good point.
Yeah, that is something to see how this unfolds.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that everyone who has an interest in politics or has an interest in how our world or how their world is going to be shaped in the next 10, 15, 20 years, or even the next few years, I think this is something that everyone should have their eyes on, whether or not you're interested in politics or not, because I think it's all going to affect all of us in at least some sort of way. Well, I think that should be about all the time we have. Does anyone want to add anything, any finishing comments before we go? Anything else anyone wants to add?
Not really to add, but just to thank Dr. Roy for taking time out of his day to be on our show. We really appreciate your insight.
Thank you, Dr. Roy.
Thank you. Yeah, and again, thanks for having me here. I just encourage all of your listeners to just pay attention. I think you make that's a great message. Listen broadly to different sides of the argument. Try to respect if you don't agree, but at least respect other people's positions. And hopefully this will lead to at least a more cooperative and accepting environment as opposed to divisive, which is what I think has been happening recently.
I think that's about all that we can hope for at this point, is to have to at least be working towards a society that we can all agree is better than the one we currently have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for coming on, everyone. This has been Radio Laurier News at Noon, and we'll be sure to see you next week at the same time.
Take care, everyone.
Bye now.
See you next week. Happy New Year.